Frank. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. I mean, this is kind of, you know, I felt like your story is just a mix of everything that we love to talk about here on the podcast. You know, it's bootstrapping, it's a small team, it's selling to developers. And, you know, this is kind of the gist of what we're going to discuss here. But first of all, let's talk about FortRabbit and you. And I found this beautiful description of what FortRabbit is. It goes like this. FortRabbit, secure like Fortnox, fast like a rabbit, is a managed cloud hosting service dedicated for PHP. And, you know, my question is, knowing that you're not a technical founder, I want to know exactly what about a managed cloud hosting service dedicated for PHP got you excited about this in the first place?
That's decisions in life that you don't take, and you sometimes end up somewhere in life, in some country, in some situation, in some job that you never actually planned to come in. And then turns out you love it. Like, you know, you have kids. You suddenly realize, I really like kids. I want to have them. Never thought about it before, like me. And that's how I ended up being FortRabbit. There's the longer story, which will I tell shortly, about how I ended up being now the only remaining co-founder.
Exactly. Yeah. So what's your background? Like, where did you start?
I am in my 50s now, born in the 70s, raised in West Berlin. And I think I was 15 when the wall came down, 1989, right? 1990. And that was a nice playground for me, and wasted all my young energy on being a graffiti writer. I painted a lot on trains and then later on walls. I had this two careers at the same moment, an illegal career and a legal career. So on both, I tried to make some progress. Yeah, and that went on until I was 30-something. I always had the computer at my side because my best friend was a total computer geek. And so I always had a computer. I always had a Mac, actually. Yeah, and then when I became older, then in winter time, it's not so much fun to go outside and go painting anymore. And then I did more graphic jobs, and I tried to combine graffiti with what I do on the computer. I did my sketches on the computer even and stuff like this. So I got into computers more and more, graphic design, and then website projects, and we became a small agency, and we created quite a few web projects back then, interactive things before Facebook or at the start of Facebook even. So it's it's a while ago. But at some point, I think 2013, we were already doing hosting for quite a while for our projects and for our clients. We decided, three friends of us, Uli, Olli, and me, featured on the website. We decided we don't want to do client projects anymore. That was really, we were really upset with it. And I'm like, not really upset. It was good money and fun as well. We had good clients, but then always your client tells you what to do, and your client knows everything better, but you know it better actually. Yeah. So, and you wanted to be in control, and you don't want to be told what to do anymore. And that was really our motivation, to say we want to do something on our own. And then it was obvious, because Uli was a genius in what is now DevOps, but there was not the term back then. There was no Kubernetes, and AWS was just, you know, like not so known as it is right now. And he was really into it, and he found so much fun in exploring this technology that the two others of us, we said, okay, let's just support the genius here and have the genius build something, and we figure out how to sell it. And my job was clearly, creating the website, the visuals, and the communication, and also taking care of the business. And then we have Uli, the infra low-level tech engineer, and Olli, the in-between glue between my visual work and that what is happening on the infrastructure. And that's what got us started, yeah. I was also very excited about startup culture back then. Mm. And we applied to a couple of accelerator programs. Unfortunately, we're not accepted for the one that we found interesting. Finally, we got accepted to one, and it was a great experience. But at the very last moment, we said, no, we're not going to take it, because our product already launched, and we already had some traction, and we thought, like, we don't know what we're getting into here, really, because the deal terms are so, for Accelerator, so vague. And it was, I liked the people. It was very intensive and a super nice time. Never forget it. Nice memories. But ultimately, we said we are not in that stage, and probably also not that, let's say, aggressive towards marketing and selling that much. And we can take it a little bit more slowly. And then on the other side, we were also launched already. We don't need a demo. So this subject was to get funding at the end. And so.
Because you had an agency at first and then you pivoted to product and your market also changed and you ended up selling to developers. How did it change your approach and how, in a way, maybe your founder mentality changed? Because it's a big switch from being in service business and being product business. So yeah, what was the change there?
I think we wanted the change, as mentioned. We wanted to build our own product and put something out that we take full responsibility and that we can also get the profit from. But then, like, developer-focused products, there was not such a thing back then, I would say. So things like HeavyBit, this program, who came later, as far as I know. And we were actually scratching our own itch. So we wanted to build the service that we wanted to have. And we, meaning my two technical co-founders. And so it's quite natural that it is a developer product. And then again, the hosting thing in general, there's a lot of consumer hosting. Still is, specifically Germany, very strong here. So we have this big hosting companies. And yeah, you had Heroku as the role model, which did it back then for Ruby on Rails. And our idea was, okay, PHP is X times larger than Ruby on Rails. And then we see the development of PHP. So we knew PHP quite well. We saw, okay, PHP 7 is coming out or just came out. Super improvement for the language. This will make web application development much easier, much better. And then we saw also competition in that space suddenly. So there were other back then funded startups. We had PagodaBox, PHP 4 Cloud Control, other names that are all gone now. I believe. But this was a topic back then, yeah. Like building Heroku, but for X, or this is Heroku, X for Heroku, something in that direction. So it felt like a very natural transition getting there, and we didn't, you know, like, thought about it strategically. Again, we just stumbled into it.
Okay. And what about, you know, because I went on the website and I read a bit of your blog posts and I watched a couple of videos, and to be honest, I really enjoyed it. I'm also not a technical person, and it's very human copy. It's basically, you know, just like having a conversation with you about what you guys are doing, how you're changing the product. And I'm wondering if that was kind of a strategic decision to, you know, just have this brand that is very accessible and dev friendly, or you just fell into this naturally.
It was, I would say, natural. Also, I mean, like, your company is you as a human. Yeah. There's some law, I forgot the name, but the discussions that you have in the company built at the end of the day the product of your company, and then how we discuss it inside is how it's going to be built and how we show it also to the outside. And we just make it a little bit more public because I like to talk, I like to be public, I like to be accessible as a human. I'm an open book, yeah. So you can, and I try to be an open book. I try to be readable. I try to be accessible as a human. So I want my company to be the same. Huh? Very, very natural, not strategic approach, I would say.
You don't need to overcomplicate it. I completely agree. And especially if you're selling to somebody who already kind of knows how it's supposed to work. So you don't need to use fancy words to make it happen.
It is. Sometimes I get critic from inside that I'm not technical enough. And we see when we look at the stats, which blog posts are more popular, definitely not my blog posts. So the developer, hey, you do this in technical blog posts are usually the most popular blog posts. That's what developers like. So right. Yes, I give it a human side, but we have to be careful with my voice that we will also provide some technical details here and there. Yeah. So likewise, I'm an in first level support usually, and there I do a very good job, but second level support I cannot do it, and I have to wait for the others to come in.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you. Like, what is your personal greatest challenge as a non-technical founder, still being, you know, a voice of the company? And, you know, what would you maybe recommend to somebody who is stumbling upon a similar problem, or, you know, a tech problem that they want to be a part of, but not necessarily have the deep expertise?
Again, I stumbled into it. And maybe again, I haven't finished the story. And maybe it makes sense that I do it now, because then it's more clear. So originally the three founders, and we launched it. It was very successful with the scene, the Laravel scene, which was very young, that they'd supported us. And we thought it was, yeah, our great product. But of course, our initial product was really shitty, looking backwards right now. And we made a lot of stupid mistakes, architectural big mistakes, not just small mistakes, but things that required us to rewrite and do it all again. But the scene was still friendly, and we still got so much support. People were linking us, and people came in, and we were, I mean, like, not profitable, but not losing money anymore after half a year or something. And then again, with no funding and bootstrapping, that was really a requirement. But after that, we were really struggling for a couple of years to get it right and to build the right features, to also ship the features that we wanted to ship in time, not too late. And there was so much struggle going on ever since, actually, and struggle is still going on. We are still a small, very small company, 5 people currently. I like the struggle. I like to struggle to some extent. So, but maybe we are anti-story. So whatever I tell, don't do it, do the opposite, and then you're going to be fine, something like that. Yeah, we were struggling with then also the alignment, and then also the financial, not, you know, like earning. We had very low salaries at the beginning, and it's fun for a year or so, and you have something on the bank, but then it's all over. It's all used up. And then maybe your family comes in and say, what the heck are you doing there? And that happened to my one of our co-founders. And he said, hey, folks, all fine, but we signed up for big success, a lot of money. This didn't happen. And I don't see it happening very soon. I'm out. And yeah, that was like, boom. And this was our genius guy. Yeah, like the sysadmin guy that we wanted to support. And then we lost the most crucial figure in the company. It was like a death blow. And the two of us, Oli and me, we were always fighting. This was another problem that Uli was the man in between, and the other two of us were fighting, constantly fighting. And so for some time we had to find peace. It was not easy. And we said, okay, no fighting anymore. Just let's keep the company up. It started growing actually again at that time, but it was struggle all the way. I mean, like, from the struggle, what was really hard for us is also relates to developer marketing. So we have this hosting business, and where can we find our target audience? And what works for us is niche, is look, this little software there, it's nice. It's in PHP. You can host it here quite well. And it is a small scene, and we're a small hoster, and we can get some visibility there. That works out for us. And back then, at the beginning, Laravel is, it was small, and we got the visibility, but it grew bigger and bigger and bigger, and sponsoring a conference got even more expensive, and we couldn't afford it anymore. Or it doesn't make so much sense, because the people that go on the conference are actually not our audience, because they are more professional. So they would go to AWS directly or something, or they have requirements that we cannot fulfill. And so on the conference, we cannot meet the target audience. So it's really hard. Shall we really sponsor that? It doesn't make much sense. And so at the end, we were also a little bit lazy about it. And then the founder of Laravel finally came up with his own hosting solution. And that really also was another, you know, like, blue for us. Oh, fuck. That was good. We survived it somehow with, you know, like, having a good product. But it immediately took so much of our income, customers that we were used to get automatically without doing anything. And so we had to invest to find this new niche. We found it in a CMS system, Craft CMS, which is a very good PHP, similar to WordPress, not so well known, but still growing and very good technically. And my code forwarder, Oli, actually found it, and he got involved into the scene, wrote plugins, and got connected to them. And then again, we were featured on their page as a recommended hosting service. And that, and we also had a partnership this time officially with some revenue share. And then the same thing happened again, so to say, that they decided themselves to build a hosting solution. Yeah. I mean, their software is not for free. It's a paid software. I think they're profitable without the hosting, but they still thought to make the best experience for at least some of their clients. They wanted to have the hosting. So now hosting is fun for technical people. So, okay, we have to accept that. And so again, we were a little bit left out of our steady income channel. Quite hard, and like a lot of blows in the business when you finally think, oh, we're doing fine right now and we're good. And then those things all happen all the time. And this was, I'm like, two major blows. We always survived somehow. I don't know how. But it's always the struggle, yeah. And then at the end, yeah, please.
Sorry, it reminds me, I just very recently had a podcast with a founder, and they've been around for a little bit over a decade, I believe now. And I always ask on every podcast, like, what is your biggest learning? And that's basically exactly what he said. He said, when you think everything is calm and, you know, everything's default alive and working, stop, because something is coming, and you just have to make sure that you are prepared, that you are smart enough about your spending and, you know, how the team is structured and the morale and everything, because something will happen and, you know, new technology will emerge and you will have to adjust again. So that reminded me very much of that story.
Yeah, I mean, the hard thing about hard things, it's, yeah. And then ultimately my left co-founder Ollie and me, what we also saw, I mean, like we had trouble like keeping the business alive, doing a little bit of marketing, then also scaling the team a little bit. We may talk about hiring later, and all this daily life things that are happening. We didn't really have the time and also the team to iterate on the platform. And being in a hosting market, there's so many technical improvements that are happening all the time. You need to be on top of that. And as a small team, we had the product built and it is in production. And when something is in production and people rely on it, you cannot easily change it. So you have to be very, very careful about it, not breaking their websites. And then small team just growing, new hires coming in. They don't understand the tech stack yet, a very complicated stack that was originally built by someone who left and who didn't wrote the code in a way that somebody else will maintain it or even updated it, and quite delicate situation. And then Ollie and me, we both had totally different vision, it turned out. I mean, like, we knew already, but we really tried to align on those visions. And we tried really hard, both of us. Not easy. We invested a lot of time and energy in this, trying to get our heads together and finally get a strategy that makes us both happy. And which is not a complete disaster in front of any customer. Yeah. So how can we arrive there? But it was like naturally we were gravitating like east and west, north and south, in total different directions. So I was more like, let's listen on the customers we have in production right now and who sign up right now. And these are usually more small tickets. So we need to grow more customers with smaller customers, a bit more like in the consumer. We are B2B, but we also have this in between B2B, B2C, bit into B2C, tinkerers, learners, small freelancers, basically. And he was like, no, let's go into, like, it's easier to have 10 clients making like 10 times the value than like 100, boarding 100 people, which I totally understood. And he understood my point, but we were not able to get anywhere. And yeah, finally, after fighting years, we found an exit strategy for him. And I paid him out. It was, again, very hard for both of us. And I have huge respect for him. And we're still friends. And this is really amazing. This is really amazing that we, at that age, you managed somehow to, after all this fighting, it was not always nice, but we finally made it in a, you know, like, very humane way that we found an exit strategy that worked for us with help of external people, with everything. But imagine how much money we spend, how much money. Yeah. And this is me. This is how I end up here now, being in this company. We have, like, beside me for other people, all of them are developers. I mean, like, I work with developers for like 20 years now. So I think I'm not that bad at product management, but also not that good. But yeah, I know what an enum is. I know, you know, about data structures a little bit. I can understand these things. But when I write a ticket, an internal ticket, I try to keep it high level. I'm not trying to be too precise and saying I want exactly this, because sometimes you get exactly that and then it is bullshit. Of course, you need to give the developers, yeah, the voice, and they need to be critical towards my thinking and need to question everything that I bring there. And once we establish this culture with new people, it's usually working out great. Yeah. So I'm really grateful for the team. And I made one of the long-term employees. They are with us for 7-8 years right now. So going through us through a lot of things and slowly becoming also business partner right now. So it's always like my peer to go to and say, okay, business decision needs to be made. So I have this person as well. So
right.
Really, no, really great team. Support. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, you know, because obviously, you know, co-founder alignment is very important. And what was it? YC doesn't even let you apply if you don't have a co-founder, because it's just way too difficult. But what are the first, do you think, little alarms that founders should keep an eye on that indicate that, you know, maybe alignment is not really there and maybe you should start working on it early?
I mean, looking at it back in retrospective, looking at it right now, yeah, so we were just totally naive. And so the way we were naive, there was no room for it. We were so focused on, we do something great, we never thought about it can go wrong. And this would be my tip. If you do something in the contract, in the contracts, or also in the handshake deals, be clear about exit strategy. So make it clear. Even I would argue, if you have three founders, it's okay for the two founders to kick one out. And with specified deal terms, this is the money you will get for sure. You don't need to discuss for the value or anything. It all needs to be set up. So everybody needs to play nice and everybody needs to work together, because they know, okay, something can happen. But this, we had this blocking veto thing where everybody could block anything, and it was just, and just only or went on and developed things that I didn't like, but he had the power to develop things, and there was no rule set in place, and it was horrible for some time. And yeah, make the contracts upfront in a way.
Prenup.
Yeah, thinking everything will go south, and then it will, and then you are prepared for it. That would be my thing. Yeah, and speaking to investors early on, and yeah, they were also like, this was a constant feedback. We got founder alignment, and we never thought what to do with it. Oh, what's that founder alignment? No idea. Now I know. Yeah, it could. Could have also been gone right, I would say. And yeah, I was really sorry that when both of them left, of course, Uli, but then also Oli, likewise, both ways. And I tried to keep the door still open, having to see how can we maybe get back to it. It's yeah, still a very sad story, but still anyhow, good that, yeah, we can try now, or I can try my vision. I'm very grateful about that, yeah.
Oh, I mean, and it's a good learning, and probably it helps you in hiring and how the team operates now. And you said we can learn a little, sorry, we can talk a little bit about your team and hiring strategy. And yeah, I'm very interested in, like, you know, what lessons did you take from this story into your hiring strategy? And what is important to you? Like, what kind of alignment are you looking for in the team?
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, how many times I hired? I think 7, 8 times, 9 times. So I don't have that much experience to get started with. I did it. I'm doing most of the work. Usually also it's a team effort. So since it's always technical roles and I cannot judge the technical answers, it's always some other person from the technical team that will do the technical interview to get started. And then also it's about, then again, talking about the candidate, seeing, do we see the same things, the same, and so on and so on. So it's always a bit of a team effort, but I do most of the work. And when I was hiring, also it depends on the position, of course, that you hire, I would argue. Sometimes it was very intensive and very long time, very intensive, but also the market is changing so much, I would say, like We were hiring quite a lot when actually COVID hit. So up until then, we were more like the Berlin startup. We had this nice factory building office thing with 180 square meters with a lot of coworkers. And we were really like a hub. But then, of course, COVID, everybody can do home office. We started doing things that we do today. And we said, okay, we're going to be remote first company that came up really quickly. And yeah, we were four or five people back then. We were all based in Berlin. We were already quite international. We had Esbjorn, Swedish, and then our first hire was, I think, from Pakistan. We actually got up here with Blue Card, and that was actually a very nice and smooth experience. So already very international. Our clients are also super international. So it's always English. Yeah. And yeah, so that was the COVID time, and that was really to our advantage. Yeah. So we said, okay, we can actually hire anywhere in the world. We don't need to have that person sitting here with us. Then, okay, they're going to be freelancers. That's a bit of a bitter pill. I like this actually being in Germany and paying a lot of taxes. To some extent, I like it. And yeah, company is also a social thing. Yeah. So, and they have the social security, job security and whatnot. So it's really great when you get fired here in Germany. You get basically 66% of your money for 1 year or something, half 9 months. It's amazing. And so we really, yeah, it is. And so I really like those things. And my aim was full employment, but okay, you cannot do this with the freelancer from Nigeria. It's not working out. But then again, you have all the talent from all over the world, but you get all the applications like, wow. And you need to filter quite a lot. Back then we used, I think it's called Recruity, ATS, application tracking system, quite helpful, but also a bit expensive. And then you get locked in because you have all the database in it. And being small, I mean, like for a bigger company, it's no problem, but being a small company and you hire like every half a year, one candidate or something, and you have to pay monthly. And then it's idle for all the time. It didn't make so much sense to keep it on. But definitely, yeah, ATS basically a CRM for hiring, and you have all the email templates and all the stuff. It's really, they have multiple systems. We like the recruiting system, whatever. Yeah, that helped with monitoring and getting the applications. Back then, there was no AI applications and no AI for screening. Yeah. So that it was still kind of, I felt DDoS attacked sometimes because there were so many applications. And I listened to the podcast from Jason Fried, 37 Signals on your show. And I would copy all that. You see, somebody is actually applying for that position there. He saw that and he really wants to have that job. He does not want to have any job, no well paid, but they want to have that job. So that is really where we see, okay, we can invest a little bit more. We can invite them for interview, or we can even invite them for the second interview. So that really is something for us. The struggle is the really good people. We have trouble paying them. Yeah. So we're as a small company, I think we have good salaries, but definitely not that you can see in bigger companies. And specifically the DevOps sector. 3-4 years ago, it was really hard. And all the good candidates where I said, oh, this is so nice. And you have an interview. And then I was pitching to them. I was actually, you know, like pitching our company. You need to work here because you can make an impact, small company, big impact, do this. But at the end, it was our offer was often turned down because of the money. Yeah. So that was really but then also we need to be hard, because when people are only in it for the money, then they're probably not going to stay that long. And so you need to find the match. So is somebody actually willing also to maybe accept a little less pay, but more freedom and more impact? Then we fit together well. Yeah, but this is really the struggle. We compete with Google, with Amazon, with all those big players in what we need as a tech stack. And we want a lot. And then, yeah, they are above 100K. This is quite a lot for us. In Berlin, and yeah, it's hard for us. And yeah,
absolutely. And have you noticed anything? I mean, now with AI applications, have you noticed anything about those applications and just the quality of them? And how do you deal with that?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, last time we hired, again, the DevOps position, we had to hire, I think, 2-3 times. That was different DevOps positions. That was really, really tough sometimes. But now, lately, with some layoffs and stuff, we had to hire a good PHP developer. And suddenly we had a lot of choice. It was actually quite good in our advantage, seeing, okay, the market is a little bit more relaxed right now. So this was, we got more good applications. Even like, hey, we have choice now. Oh, this looks awesome. Looks great. So that was good. But in between, you have all the noise. Yeah, basically. Yeah? So before that, you had these ugly applications that were ugly layout, ugly everything, and typos and whatnot. And now you have the applications that look so nice and they also look targeted. Yeah. So you have these services that will create a CV and a resume and everything targeted for your job offer. And
I actually think it's better with AI now.
No, it's not, because you have a harder time filtering the noise. Yeah. So because you have to understand. Luckily, my trick, please don't share this, is that I look at the PDF. And then usually the PDF, the meta information of the PDF says who created this PDF. And then I can filter out everything that was Canva or how these services are called. They will immediately get filtered out. I will not look at most of the, unless, let's say, the intro is nicely written. Also the intro, like that small text that you get in the email application is almost always, I mean, I can understand. I mean, like, what do you want to, PodRabbit is so great because blah, blah, blah. And you do it 100 times and then you, okay, I understand, but usually I filter based on such things. Yeah, like I see the, and yeah, you see it right away. Okay, this is AI, yeah. This is AI. And if it's too much, no chance.
And dashes and whatnot.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. It's, you know, it's, I think in a way, market is definitely more relaxed, especially for developers, because, well, developer relaxed for employers. So now you have the choice because there were layoffs. And I sometimes look from the other side when I get, you know, like 100 asks for a referral per month from people I don't know for technical jobs at SaaS Group. And I'm like, okay, well, something is going on. But at the same time, when I was hiring for a marketer position, that's why I asked about the quality of applications. And yes, first of all, the cover letter, just forget about this. You know, the applications, the way they look, and especially if you insert anything like, yeah, tell me why us, why PodRabbit, why SaaS Group? And yeah, basically people just don't give a damn. They are there for the money, and they are just trying their luck if they can get hired. And in a way, I understand, but in a way, also it's so sad that like we have to sit through 400 applications where, you know, 16 are more or less good.
Yeah, I mean, like you can use now AI to filter, then the application tracking systems all have that built in. So they will pick the right candidate, I'm pretty sure. So you have a battle between the AIs. And why not? We didn't start the fire. But yeah, I mean, like after all, there are humans behind it. And yeah, one thing I really enjoy about hiring is actually also speaking to people. It is a great chance. And I like to meet international people, and there you have the chance to Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Syria, Iran, Iraq. You have all the calls all over the world, and you speak to, and you get their background. And in a sense, everybody is kind of great. And it's really hard for me as saying no. This is also something I had to learn, like saying no, saying, okay, no, this will definitely not work out. Not, you know, like paint a pretty picture where there is not. Yeah, but still, and it's all sometimes like really, Oh, heartbreaking stories. Like, for instance, somebody is, I had some person was stuttering quite a lot. Like the problem. And I think it was technically so good. And I had a call with him for half an hour. And then at the end, towards the end, he started relaxing and I was really seeing his talent. But it still didn't work out. But I was like, yeah, it was so. And he was also like punished from other recruiting systems and stuff for just the stuttering. It is a barrier, but then again, it's also an opportunity for you as an employee if that person is really good to develop, which he could definitely could be. Yes, such stories. Or someone is at a work application visa in Berlin. So they have the visa to apply for a job here in Germany, and they have like 3 months to get the job. And if not, they need to get out again. It's like, wow, such a brutal reality. And then they're like, oh, hey, you're my... We had actually the first interview or something, that the video interview that we're actually doing. And there's so much hope from them on their side. And you are so, yeah, so la-la. Let's see, maybe not. And it's, wow, it's brutal. Yeah. Huh? So...
Absolutely. Yeah. No, working with people is always such a balance. But, you know, coming back to what you were doing with Fortra a bit, because I really want to dig a little bit into this, because, you know, I talk a lot with the founders of bootstrap companies, and I feel like in the last couple of years, with AI especially, we're romanticizing bootstrapping quite a bit. So we call slow growth sustainable growth and organic growth and whatnot, you know.
Is that so? I don't know. Yeah.
Sometimes it's too sustainable. It could have picked up already, right? So my question is, you know, full transparency, kind of, do you think that maybe bootstrapping is a bit over romanticized, and apart from this obviously very enjoyable freedom, you also get the grind and the struggle and, you know, alignment issues and everything. And what actually, like, worked for you personally with realization that you chose to be bootstrapped and you stayed bootstrapped?
Did we chose to be bootstrapped? We applied for funding, but we didn't get funding. So that was the only option to realize our vision and to be totally transparent and honest here. No, but yes, of course, in the beginning, we had this, you read the Elon Musk story, read the Apple, the Steve Jobs story, and who's not story at the beginning of your like startup story, super excited. And well, domination, of course, we're all into that. We want to become Heroku, but 10 times great, bigger than that, of course. And we make a lot of money, and you have these, also if you try to sell it to VC and you have your hockey stick financial things, and you suddenly start believing in this bullshit yourself. Like, and then you need to pitch it, and you pitch it over, and it echoes in your head, and you start believing that somehow, you know, it will not happen like this, but you start believing in that. And then reality crashes and something else is happening. And then, yeah, of course, my co-founder found, no, this is not the way for him. He wants to make more money and he's doing a lot of money, hopefully for him. No, I think so. Yes. I still don't, but I'm happy in my position. And now being 50 and growth. Yeah. I mean, of course, but am I happy right now with 4 people, a really nice team, very personal relations, and we have so much freedom. Wow. Great. I have my kids. I have my family. I'm so happy in my life where I am right now. Now imagine the whole thing is growing like crazy. That will mean a lot of stress, and we need to, will we survive? I mean, you want it. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm against growth, and we are building this new platform right now. We're putting it out and we are very curious what it will be like. And we hope for some more growth again as well, but not growth is not the ultimate goal for me, I would say. Huh? I would say I'm happy where I am. It can slowly grow with ups and downs, and I don't need to change anything in my life right now. So I'm happy where I am. Huh?
That's great. All right. Well, you know, first of all, I'm very happy to hear that. But also, you know, for those who are still trying to figure out if they are going to VC or they're staying true to bootstrap track, what are kind of potential, still maybe not regrets, but kind of a FOMO. Okay, what if we tried again? What if we went to another VC?
Yeah, I don't think FrontRabbit would exist today because we were not, you know, like the KPIs wouldn't have matched up. They would have shut us down at some point where we were struggling here and there and there. So the persistence that we have and keeping on to that vision and learning now over 13 years in that specific business, what our clients want, that puts us in a position where we know so much about the market. I mean, you also learn when you like crash a couple of companies quickly, of course, but the freedom to have the persistence to pursue this idea for quite a long time, I think was only possible with it. And yeah, I'm, I don't know, and this is lifestyle entrepreneur, which is really what I am. I enjoy this lifestyle, being my own boss, work whenever I want, really enjoy work. There's no deadlines I have to take. We are sometimes overcomplicating things. We are over-engineering things. We are overthinking things. We are all guilty of that. We stopped having internal deadlines. I mean, we do have the internal deadlines, but there's no problem when we shift them to the future. Yeah, so we don't have a lot of pressure here. Yeah, if somebody's sick, somebody wants to have holidays, there's no, but we need to ship this kind of situation. I cannot judge about the other side. I can only judge about my lifestyle entrepreneurship. And for me personally, it works quite well. I'm really happy to have the freedom. I always had problems with authority. I don't know what would have happened if there was some authority like in my own company. So I'm really, I can tell about this side and about me personally, I'm fine with it.
All right. So you ended up choosing the bootstrap path.
And ended up being in this bootstrap, I'm not choosing, not by choice. Yeah. We applied here and there, yeah? And it didn't work out, but we tried anyhow at the end of the day. So, and that is our story so far. And it's great. I listened to that podcast with Pavel about the M&A thing because, yeah, SaaS Group is buying companies and I really like what SaaS Group is doing. And I potentially scratch my head sometimes and think, oh, a strong partner, it would be nice at some point. But then I looked at what SaaS Group is looking in when they look for a startup. And there's so many checkboxes that we don't fulfill currently, I have to admit, quite openly. Yeah. So you have this thing that almost runs on its own, like a passive income thing. I think, yeah, of course, I can understand the buyer side. That would be perfect. So there's something that generates revenue growth automatically, doesn't need a lot of maintenance, doesn't have support. We have the complete opposite. Because of being a lifestyle thing, we really enjoy this, actually. Having a complicated tech stack, nobody will understand. It's so complicated. It's so spaced out and nerdy. And then we have all the first level support. We have this human support. We have this chat bubble on the page. I do a lot of support. So that is support intensive. I can do it in my, you know, like in between time. There's so many, I think currently at least, red flags for how we operate. And then again, also the high profit margin. Do I care about profit? Not really. I have to admit that because I have a good salary or a kind of okay salary. I can make a living with that. What's the benefit of my company having a profit? I don't understand that yet. Somebody needs to explain it to me. So I'm okay that the balance each year, there's a small plus or small minus. It doesn't matter to me. It's okay. We have some money on the bank. Yeah. It's okay.
Be still a strategic acquisition from what you're telling me. Yes, maybe not that much of a fit for us because like you said, we do like something that kind of runs on its own already and we can add people to accelerate that growth. But yeah, I mean, as far as I learned about FrontRabbit, it's a great product and has this perfect little niche it works with. So, you know, for a strategic buyer, it can be just a blessing.
Yeah, it's yeah, I'm underselling it, of course. But yeah, again, this lifestyle entrepreneurship is, yeah, I do things a little bit differently. But maybe, again, being an anti-pattern and not being like, turn everything in the opposite that I say, and then you're going to be very successful or struggle the way I do.
And turn it around.
Yes, that then it's fine, but don't follow my example. This is like how you not do it and still be happy to some extent. Yeah, but you can also be happy, maybe more, I don't know, doing it the opposite way.
Yeah. All right. Well, just a couple more questions to, you know, finish this up. I mean, you already were very transparent about the whole story of you and the company, but what are, you know, kind of the staples? What is the biggest win and the biggest failure? And it can be for you personally as a founder or for the company.
We touched so many things about it. There's no, not this one big thing. I talked about the founder struggle that we've had, all the external things that are happening. It's a constant struggle. I thought about the current situation that I'm in. You have to fight with bureaucracy a lot. That is, usually I'm a more left-wing person maybe, but the bureaucracy, sometimes the European things that good intentions you see, but then the how it's implemented, it's horrible. All the tax scheme things that you need to care about, and being, I take care of most of the business stuff. I have an accountant, but we need to work closely and figure out things together. And it's sometimes, it's a horror. Just, you know, like one example, not the worst, but one, you know, like this, you try to be creative. You try to build a great product, and you need positive energy for that, to motivate the team and yourself to write something beautiful for the website or to create a nice design. And then I think it happened 22 when last founder left and I got the majority of the shares of the company, I didn't knew that your status will change. So I cannot be employed anymore in a sense with social security. I need to be kind of like a freelancer. And now we need to file back the whole process, and I need to find a private insurance, and it's getting way more expensive for me right now. And this thing kept me busy for a month. And then when I get into this, I try to understand it. And what do these numbers actually mean? And I need to pay personally a lot of money. And then how do I need to, like, maybe the company gets me the money, but I cannot take the money out of the company. And all this, like, you're bound in this system, which is not made for a small company like ours. It's just so much.
Somebody from German government should listen to this.
Yeah, they do. I mean, like, they, again, it's not the party that I elected. They want to I voted for, but I mean, like, every party basically want to clean it up right now. But to some extent, I like it. Then
the most horrible thing I've heard about German bureaucracy is that, after, you know, for example, SaaS Group acquires a company in Germany, they have to be there sometimes for an entire day to actually listen to a lawyer read out the contract. And sometimes it's, you know, 100+ pages. And when I heard about it, I thought it was a joke. But apparently not. What if he's a slow reader? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's these things in Germany. But on the other side, then you find your hacks. I had a lawyer who was such a stack backdoor, and I had him back from my graffiti days when he fighted for me and called for me. And so we had a good relation anyhow. And then I came in with my couple of friends, and we skipped some of those parts. So that is also possible. But yeah, it is quite bureaucratic. Sometimes I like it. Sometimes it's this German, like, we do it right. But then again, come on, it's 2020 or whatever. Let's wake up. Yeah.
It's time to start reading out your contracts. But what about the win? Maybe there was, you know, something really good that happened that stood with you.
It's the total experience working with people, working with really nice people, with the team, having a couple of alumni now as well, still being in touch with them, seeing what they are doing. One started his own hosting business right now and becoming a competition. I guess my guess would be that he's going to be more successful in 1 year as a solo founder than we are. That is how life is. But still, you know, like, we have these check-ins from time to time where we talk like, hey, co-founder, how's your business going? And I learned from him. He's learning from me still. And these kind of making personal relations and, yeah, being able, I mean, being the employee alone, that is such a gift, yeah? And you know, like, your company that you build it is able, not me, but the company, we all do it together, but this thing that you are pushing for all the time is paying the bills. And I mean, the customers owe to me, but But being in this position, being the employer and having some control there, and we have such a nice team and incredible. And nice customers as well.
Okay. I mean, honestly, everything you said, it was kind of giving me at first like this feeling of, oh my God, this is so hard. And, you know, you've had such a journey with lots of things happening against you. And at the end of the day, it's really great to hear that, you know, you're grateful for the experience. And at the end of the day, this is something that you are very happy with. And I think that's very much of, you know, this entrepreneurial mentality where you're like, yes, it is a struggle, but I like to solve one problem after another. And at the end of the day, it just works.
Yeah. I think one story, okay, if we have one story that, yeah. I mean, like, just shortly, you remember Wirecard?
Sorry?
You remember Wirecard?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We were Wirecard clients because we had to, at that time, Stripe was not on the European market when we invented it. And then, you know, like the news came in and I was listening to the news and my ears were getting bigger and bigger. And I had a key account manager who was also featured in the news of those documentaries later on. He was kind of nice. And I think he helped us not, you know, like another possibility, your company can get bankrupt because we had 2 months of revenue on their bank account because of the schedule, how it was back then. They were a little bit slower than Stripe, Stripe much faster. And yeah, they were about to file bankruptcy, and I knew, and I was talking to him, but we need to get this money out. We're screwed when we cannot get that money out. We did it last minute, like really like in the last second we were able. And you know, like you have the payment processor and the payment data, and it's so sensible data. We are not allowed to have this by PCI compliance, and it had to be transferred from Wirecard to Stripe. And then it's a manual process where humans need to get on the phone and they need to call each other, both of the providers. And you can imagine like how many people are doing it at the same time. And somehow we were lucky to to steer ourselves out. So this is what one of, there's so many stories. Yeah.
Yeah. I once went to SaaS group retreat, and, you know, lots of things happened to me in the course of like a couple of months. And I was telling our founder, Tim Schumacher, about it. And he looked at me and he was like, oh my God, shit happens to you. And to quote Tim Schumacher, shit happened to you. I mean, yeah, this is, I remember it because I had a friend who worked there. And she was absolutely devastated by this because she was a marketer there, very fresh out of university, you know, worship the company and, you know, being able to have this experience in this huge corporation. And yeah, she got out and yeah, it was, I believe it was a shock. So yeah, that's a crazy story. So, you know, just one more. What is a hack that you can share that, you know, you believe other founders would appreciate, and can be, again, it can be anything, can be hiring, can be your mental health, can be anything that works?
Not really. I thought about it. You sent me the question up front by email, and I don't know. It's a struggle every day. If I found a hack, I would tell you certainly. But maybe getting off the computer from time to time, switching off, which I have a problem with, because you have the founder mentality, you have this thing. Before I go to bed, I look into support again. First thing I do in the morning, I look into support and the stats, and I have my mobile with me all the time. Nighttime ping, alerts come up, they need to wake me up, all that stuff. And I'm used to it right now. But this disconnect to have it is really important for some time. So what really helps me, holiday with family. And having a little bit of disconnect, at least I have my computer with me all the time, but then I go on a hiking trip or something and then the kids come at me. And so I have a full day, like 12 hours without really like being actively on the computer, maybe looking to support, but not, you know, like writing code or doing anything like that. So this distance, and I try to tell everybody in the team to not follow my example, be online all the time. Don't read my Slack messages. I mean, like sometimes I write Slack messages at 10 o'clock or something, I try to schedule them for the next morning so they don't reply at that time. Don't be there. Take it easy and take the time off. Take your holidays. If you want to have extra holidays, take them. Find a hobby. Don't be that only online, only this person. Have a parallel life, have a real life as well.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, not exactly a hack, but maybe also, you know, these days a hack too, because so many people are hooked and there is no such thing anymore as work-life balance, especially if you're remote, because you basically roll out of your bed into working on your laptop. So yeah, I think that's
a good thought. And work-life, I mean, like, I live work, I work life. I mean, like, this is the same for me. I never worked a day in my life, I always say, because I enjoy so much what I'm doing. But then I also have to understand my employees might be different. They are not the founders. They have a daytime job and they should have the daytime job. I'm not expecting them to be, you know, like that committed as I am. And they should never be. Total different story. And there's also something for other founders to understand. And also not just, you know, like technical founders. I see this in some businesses as well, where the founder has this idea of what their employees might be up to. It's his company, not theirs. They need to understand. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great approach. Well, thank you so much for telling the story and, you know, for sharing this hack. It was absolutely a blast talking to you. I enjoyed, you know, the transparency. It does, I at first I wanted to say it doesn't happen often. It does happen often here, but anyway.
You should say that, yeah.
Each story is very unique. So yeah, thanks for sharing it. Been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I need to pitch. I'm a bad marketer. I need to pitch the new platform. It's coming out. I don't know. We're thinking about it's alpha for a long time. Releasing the beta is next, public beta. I think we're quite ready. But then again, we're hesitant to do it this year because holiday is coming up. And when something's happening, I don't want to stress out the team that they, you know, like be there to support the customers. Let's see if we launch it this year or next year. Not fully decided. Probably this year in public beta. It's not the final product, half a year or something. But it is a very big bet for us to do that. We worked on this for years now, yeah. And it's finally time for us to put it online. It's something that we're very excited and something also totally scared about because it's so easy. Yeah. If you do it on your own, you have no clients, no customers. Or you don't know if you're going to get any customers, if people will be interested in that. So we are also really anti-MVP. It's a fully product. And I think in our market, it needs to be a fully product. So it cannot be some unstable one trick pony or something. In this market, it needs to be something that really brings value. All right. Okay. Enough talking for me. Like you said before, do this for me. So I can.
Yes.
Don't keep
but
talking.
Yeah, then, you know, now it's good to know because now I know that I can come back to you next year and we'll
see how it went. Please do.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks, Anna, for having us. I really enjoyed this one. Yeah.
Anytime. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. SaaS Unbound is brought to you by SaaS Group. We're a long-term home for great B2B SaaS. We buy, keep the team and brand DNA, and help with the boring stuff like hiring and finance so founders can truly focus on building great products. If you're a founder who'd like to be featured or explore an acquisition, reach out through the form on our website or email me at anna@saas.group.